Welcome to Planet of the Apes, the Forbidden Zone, and our exclusive interview with Rise of the Planet of the Apes screenwriters Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver. We spoke with Rick and Amanda just a few days after the movie opened. Be aware, this interview does contain spoilers, so don't listen until after you've seen the movie.
First of all, thank you again so much for this opportunity. This is fantastic. I had no idea that I would be talking to the screenwriters of this great movie.
Well, thank you so much. We're thrilled to be talking to you too.
And also, I wanted to say congratulations on the tremendous success. It defied all expectations and has doing wonderfully at the box office and getting great reviews. My first question is, how do you feel about all that?
It's like we're on an alternate planet. You know, it's kind of crazy. We're thrilled and we're excited and
grateful.
And
we're very grateful.
We're so grateful. I mean, so much of it's just the success has come on a lot of different levels. I mean, it's doing well at the box office, but the response that we've been getting from people has just been so overwhelming and so wonderful. And things we really kind of dreamed of achieving when we first set out with this project, to see those things coming together and coming to fruition is really overwhelming.
You know? Oh, I bet. So how did you guys get attached to the project?
Well, Rick has always kept a file of articles and ideas kind of to look at for inspiration. And we were in between projects. This was 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some articles about chimps that had been raised as humans in homes, mm-hmm. and how that had always come to trouble for the chimps and their owners. And he stared at these articles, and he knew there was some sort of thriller there. He knew there was a juicy story for us, but he was trying to see it, and all of a sudden he had this kind of light bulb moment, and he said, "Oh, my God, it's Planet of the Apes." And he came to me and he said, "Amanda, I have an idea to reboot Planet of the Apes." And I kind of was trying to be supportive. I kind of faked a little smile, like no idea how he was going to try and do this. And I said, "Okay, what is it?" And then he started talking about this character of this chimp raised in a home as if he were a boy. And before I knew it, you know, we were both head over heels in love with this character of Caesar. And we didn't know if Fox was developing anything for their franchise. We had no idea.
But if they were even interested. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we had worked a little bit at Fox and really liked this. We're close to one of the executives, a guy named Peter Kang.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Peter and we pitched our idea. At that point, it was just the bare outlines of our idea. And he loved it and ran it down the hall to Hutch Parker, who was then, I guess he's president of production.
He was president of production, man, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got really lucky.
We got immediate, very positive response, and everyone started to get excited. And they were unsure, you know, there was a bit of uncertainty about whether they wanted to go in and try to retackle Planet of the Apes or not. But
mm-hmm.
What was fun, and you know, in retrospect, is that they were just really excited about the story. It was very original. It was totally different, you know, way to go, and like Amanda said, we had worked there before and had good relationships, so
mm-hmm.
So that's really kind of how it all got started.
How did Scott Frank get involved in the project? Did he come on after that point?
No, we did a number of drafts. I'm not sure how many.
It was like 2 years worth of drafts.
2 years mm-hmm. worth of work on a script off and on, and then Scott came on as a director.
Mm-hmm.
Scott works a lot at Fox, and they're very fond of him there. You know, they've got a shorthand relationship with him, and so he came on as a director.
Okay.
We did like a draft and a half, two drafts, I guess, with Scott as the director, and then he went to Fox and said that he would like to take a crack at the script.
Mm-hmm.
So then he went off and did a draft as writer director, and then that subsequently did not work out, and he moved on, and they moved on, and ultimately went back to us.
Mm-hmm.
So then we brought the story back to where it was before Scott started writing.
Did you were you able to use any of his material, or did you just toss it aside and go with the start fresh?
No, we did. I mean, Scott's a wonderful. I mean, look, Scott is a terrific writer.
Yep, absolutely.
And so yeah, we you learn a lot working with Scott, and mm-hmm. then you know there were things in the draft that he did
that he contributed.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that we said, oh yeah, he did this, because anything that we decided to keep from Scott, we kind of embellished on it, worked with it, you know, took it and ran with it, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys fans of the original series?
Oh yeah.
Oh, we're huge fans.
Oh, wonderful.
Rick is a little more, or a lot more informed than I am.
Yeah, I'm older than she is, so that's a big part of it. But yeah, we're both very big fans of the series, and you know, I guess the original more than the rest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I had seen all the movies, and was really a big part of my childhood, and I think.
Yeah, I had seen all the movies too and loved them. But I think you had seen them multiple times.
Well, yeah, it's only because I'm older and I've been in front of a television more and stuff. But I, you know, I can remember going to a drive-in movie with my best friend and watching A Dusk to Dawn, you know, Planet of the Apes marathon when we were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And
awesome.
You know, yeah. So I love it. You know, it's like everyone else in our generation is really touched by the story.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. One of the things that I really like about Rise of the Planet Apes compared to, say, the Tim Burton remake is that while it's still a bit of a reboot, you guys really stuck with the original continuity a lot.
We really, our aim was to make a movie that could bring in new fans and stand on its own, but also that would pay homage to the originals.
Mm-hmm. And honor
the originals.
Yeah.
And we really had one eye on the fans at all time. We really...
It shows.
Well, you know what? You know what? That is like music to our ears, because not only do we want to honor the movies, we wanted to honor the fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that the fans felt, I don't know, there was a bit of ill will, I could venture to say, after the Tim Burton movie.
I think that's a good way to describe it.
You know, I mean, we're huge fans of Tim Burton.
And me too.
And William Broyles, by the way, who's a very smart, terrific writer,
mm-hmm.
who wrote the screenplay. So it's tough to be critical of that movie, but it's just somehow it didn't work. And,
right.
We wanted to make the fans happy.
We wanted to really say, you know what, we love it too, and let's go on this new adventure together. Let's look at this in a slightly different way, but you know, bring it back. Bring it back to life and try to explain. You know, we said to Fox, we said, look, let's look at this real as if it could really happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, let's really take a look at this and, like, what's going on in the world right now. You know, and of course at the time, August 2006, but what's going on right now in the world of science and our cultural world, you know, that a certain number of dominoes or certain dominoes could line up, and if they were just to touch each other just the right way,
mm-hmm.
you know, apes would take over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And let's really try to tell that story and, you know, and also use the Planet of the Apes mythology to help us get there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. One of the things I wanted to ask was about the characters of Will and Caroline. I really like how the focus of the film, it starts on Will and then shifts over to Caesar.
Right.
And he becomes the main character. It's kind of like the passing of the baton from
right.
father to son. But then Will and Caroline kind of drift to the background a little bit.
Right.
Was there any material with them in your script that didn't make it into the final film?
You know what happens in the development of a script over many, many drafts is that there are versions. There were definitely scenes between Will and Caroline that we all wanted to have in there. We just didn't have the room
mm-hmm.
to do that. You're very right that the focus. What happens is once Caesar gets to the facility, that those two stories, Will's story and Caesar's story, diverge,
mm-hmm.
and their relationship is in many ways the heart of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the tricks in the screenplay and the directing and the editing is to balance those two stories and keep those two stories connected, keep the characters connected even when they're not together.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried many different ways to do that. We had talked with Rupert, and Rupert was great developing this part of the script. We talked with him a lot about Caroline and Will's, like Will's testing on chimpanzees. Again, would she find out about that? Would he hide it from her? Moments like that that we all really loved. But in the end, the tempo of the film and the balance of the film required that we simplify that storyline a little bit.
Right. A lot of the development of the script was really about reducing it down to its core, you know?
Right.
Which was really Caesar's journey and his relationship with Will. And so there were scenes, there were a lot of scenes, you know, that were shot that didn't make it into the film, not because they weren't effective or well executed, but it just, you know, there's a certain kind of, I don't know, requirement these days to move the story.
Well, the exigencies of the whole movie and the tempo of the whole movie required this cut.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so and a lot of the scenes were just trimmed, so it's interesting that you picked up on that. So, but and over the years, the role of Caroline shifted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one point, you know, she was a veterinarian who volunteered at the primate facility.
Oh, interesting.
And that's how we worked her into the script that way and developed a relationship with Will, and it just kept shifting.
There was another version where she begins by working at the lab with Will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when they put all the primates down, she leaves in horror and runs into Will many years later when he comes with Caesar. And those drafts, she was a great barometer of how much Will has changed because of his relationship with Caesar. You know, every time you cut something from the script, you lose something.
Oh, yeah.
But
we love the draft where she worked at the lab and then when he shows up at the zoo in order to get his leg, you know, sewed up, guess who's there to, you know, and it's her, and it's like, and it's this great re-meeting, and, but, you know, there just wasn't enough room. I mean, we really had to develop the character of Franklin, you know, because he plays such a huge, you know, important part of the plot, and, so anyway, it's one of those things, you know, it's like, yeah, we definitely, we tried to make those roles bigger, but there's just not enough time, so you really have to start telling it in shorthand.
Mm-hmm. That gives us something to look forward to on the DVD.
I guess so, yeah. I know that they're working really hard on the DVD. We did the commentary. I know Rupert's done a commentary, and we did a commentary the other day.
Great.
It'd be great if they had deleted scenes in there.
Yeah,
I hope they
will. You know, it's interesting because we saw cut after cut after cut of the movie with no CGI rendering.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? So we see, you know, Andy Serkis getting his legs sewn up by Frida Pinto while James Franco's flirting with her, you know, and we just had to imagine that it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know? But it would be fascinating to see if they have scenes like that in the DVD that people can see just not only how brilliant Andy is, you know, I mean, he's just... If you know the cuts the way we do and it's been on the set the way we were and people on the set, and then you see the movie, you know that you're watching Andy's performance.
Oh, yeah. It definitely came through.
It is Andy Serkis, you know, bringing life to that character and executing those scenes and so forth and the emotion.
And what is brilliant in capturing it.
But the other thing you see, which, you know, is kind of the an unsung hero here, is then James Franco and Frida Pinto are playing with Andy in a leotard.
Mm-hmm.
Pretending that he's a chimpanzee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, as great as it all is, you know, of Andy, I think everyone else in the movie...
They're the ones who sell it.
Yeah, it's insane, you know? And James is just so natural, and Frida was just so loving, and with Caesar, you know, when he was Andy. Anyway, and then you see it on screen, and just, it's seamless, really.
Excellent. One question I had was, in the 5-year jump, did they get married?
They did in post.
I figured, you know, 5 years together, if she's not hounding him, then her mother certainly is.
I love that question because the truth is, in the script, they didn't.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't really
they
have...
They were living in sin.
They were living in sin. And the truth is, we really didn't have the time or energy to deal with it, which would have been very easy to deal with. We just put a ring on her finger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so someone said in a post, can we just put a ring on her finger? You know?
Cool.
But I don't think they ever did that. But I think the implication is...
They're together,
and whether they're married or not is not such an issue. But
right,
that is a great question.
It was something I was curious about while watching it. did you have any concerns about using the iconic quotes from the original, such as "Get your stinking paws off me"?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We did, and. To his credit, Tom Rothman really pushed us to...
He said, trust me, it will work.
Yeah, he really pushed us to try it. And we had a lot, as I'm sure you know, of all people, but we had a lot of imagery that we...
Oh, yes.
...originals and lots of Easter eggs, and which we had a blast doing. Easter eggs, you know, I mean, like names and places and, you know, props and stuff. But
I love seeing Charlton Heston in the background on the television.
Yeah. You say you love that?
Yes, I did.
Oh, great. Well, that was controversial, too. I mean, with some of the people on the production side, or the creative, you know, the production team, I guess I should say, were concerned it would take people out of the movie, but people love it. I mean, just love it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want it to draw attention to itself too much, the Easter eggs. We wanted we didn't want to pull people out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But so we were taking a gamble with some of those moments. But we just kind of like, it was a leap of faith that it was going to work. and indeed, like when we saw this the first time with audiences, it was clear that it was playing and it wasn't going to interfere with the movie. And of course, some people, my 9-year-old nephew, who's never seen any of the Planet of the Apes movies, is a new fan. And, you know, all the references went right over his head, and it didn't matter.
What's fun for us, though, is that we've seen it. We've popped into a few theaters, and of course we were at the premiere and all, but to see kids and their parents whispering to them, like something will happen, and whispering, oh, that's the Statue of Liberty, you know, that kind of stuff. But on the Damn Dirty Ape thing, we were really concerned about that, and Tom, like, you know, guys, find a place to put it, and there was really only one place it would fit, and it was where we ended up putting the line, and it's great. I'll tell you, Tom, you know, it worked. It could not have worked out better, because people chuckle, almost giddy, you know, when he says it. And then, you know, Rupert and the editors just timed it just right to when, finally, you know, when Caesar speaks. And then it's like, they're kind of giddy. It's kind of like they've been set up, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then, boom, you know, you've got this great, you know, knockout punch. And I tell you, I get chills every time I see it.
And the other line, where they put in, it's a madhouse.
All right.
Has that, it introduces that incredible shot that Rupert and Andrew Lesney did.
Yeah.
Where they go through the ape house and then out, that door closes.
Yeah,
it really works.
It's a great cut to James and, you know, in the courthouse trying to get Caesar out.
How much discussion did you guys have on Caesar talking? And
what would be between us or between us in the studio, or what do you mean?
All of you, between you two, and then also with the studio. The first line was great when he says no.
Right.
It worked fantastic with the mythology of the series.
Right.
And then I was a little wondering at the end when he speaks in a complete sentence.
Right. Well, there was a lot of the no moment was never a debate. You know, everyone.
Yeah, that was perfect.
We built the whole
We built the whole script around that moment.
Oh.
And so, you know, yeah, because we knew the mythology and we knew his name was going to be Caesar, and you know what I mean. And so we crafted back, you know, forward and backward from that moment. In terms of him speaking, there was a lot of debate about it, and there was debate about the whether he should, you know, what exactly should he say at the end. There weren't that many options. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like Caesar home, the apes free, Caesar free. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah, I was kind of expecting the Tarzan dialect.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is that that was... It evolved at the very... almost just before the movie came out, really, to the Caesar is home. And it was really more to work with the scene of, you know, James trying to get him to stay and so forth. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's stay,
I think
but
also,
come home. Yeah.
I think also that there was a realization that him using a voice like that would create a really intimate moment between him and James.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what they really wanted. That Rupert, I mean, I think Rupert was really smart about that, you know, that he'd be whispering in his ear, in contrast
yeah,
to
I mean, the whisper
yelling.
Really came from Rupert and Andy and mm-hmm. James working together.
Was that Andy Serkis's voice?
Yes.
I thought so. I thought the voice was perfect. When he says no the first time,
yeah.
it's
yeah.
got kind of a low guttural. It
yeah.
sounds like halfway between speech and a growl.
Yeah. Andy, of course, as you know, is, you know, spectacular voices. So
oh, yes.
And he played around quite a bit with how to say no. I mean, it's everything from a very much more guttural to,
mm-hmm.
you know, almost unintelligible and, you know, well, was it no or not? And, you know, but eventually landed firmly on where we were, which we were really pleased with.
Mm-hmm. It was definitely perfect. Spot on.
Yeah.
So are you guys working on a sequel now?
Well, there hasn't been any official discussion. I think, you know, everyone's been very superstitious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the attitude was, and rightfully so, that, you know, fans would really be the ultimate, you know, I don't know if the word decider, what would be the right word? They would be
arbiters.
Arbiters, yeah. They would be ultimately the arbiters of whether there would be a sequel. And so now that, you know, the response has been so wonderful, and
mm-hmm.
There has been some very preliminary discussions and, about, you know, sequels and stuff. But we were very, very excited to get back in there and revisit these characters. And, you know, if you see the movie, you can see that we really were planning.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean? We kind of teed it up, and not just Amanda and I, but all of us, you know, the whole team
mm-hmm.
teed it up so that, you know, there could be more of it.
That was one of the other things that I really liked, was how you used the credits as the cookie themselves instead of having to sit through, like, all the Marvel films and wait for something at the very end.
Right.
It was actually incorporated into the actual credits.
Right. Yeah, that was also a group decision. I mean, that came from, I think, several different tries of you know, whether it should be right at the end or...
We always had the coda of the neighbor
right.
and the pilot and the airport. It was always a coda, but it wasn't until, you know, very late in the editing process
mm-hmm.
that the decision came up, okay, so before, after credits, how to do it. And
yeah, is it right after? I mean, because, you know, the people, it's, the movie's emotionally over anyway when Caesar
right.
is at the top of the tree. And so then, you know, what's best for the audience's emotional place, and, you know, then because we really had to tie it up. And so if that came together, it was a real, you know, group effort.
It was excellent.
Right.
Definitely. The last thing I wanted to ask you was about working together as married screenwriters. How does that work out for you guys? Do you guys work in the same room, or do you kind of trade drafts back and forth, or what's your process like?
Well, we've been working together and married for a long time, for over 20 years, so...
Do you get sick of each other?
What's that?
You know what? He's asking to get sick of each other.
I really don't. I don't think, at least... Okay, you know, wait a minute, you answer that first.
Yeah.
You know what? We are a really good team. We're a good team. I know that sounds very nerdy, but it's completely true. We're a good team writing, and we, you know, we raise a family together, so...
Yeah, we you know, it takes work, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but we work very hard on listening to each other and listen openly, you
mm-hmm.
know? Like, you know, if someone starts off saying something and you think, oh, my God, this is, I disagree with this idea. But you sit there and you listen to the whole idea, and then by the time the person's finished, well, maybe you can see their point. And I don't know, we we have strengths and weaknesses that complement each other. Over the years, we've had, you know, separate office space and, you know, where we would be in different offices. But right now, we've been working in the same office, I don't know, for a while on it. And that's worked out great. Each project is different. Sometimes, you know, one of us will take the lead on it and do pages or sequences even. You know, we write in sequences, whether we're apart or separate. I mean, apart or together. So, and then trade those pages to the other one as if that person were a producer, and then we rewrite them together. But the most fun we've had, I would say, like our top three favorite scripts have been ones where we literally, from the idea through the character, you know, development to the outline to the writing of the script, the rewriting, we've been in the room together the whole time. And that's, you know, it's a real blessing, really, to tell you the truth.
It's a tough business.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ups and downs, and it's good to, you know, to share that.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, Rick and Amanda, again, I can't thank you enough for this great opportunity. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your site and all that, and we're thrilled to talk to you, too.